Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long. Healing rain is coming down, it's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name. The healing rain, it comes with fire, so let it fall and take us higher.
Good morning and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, always and every day, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. The beginning of the week, this is Monday. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Internate Blog Talk Radio. It's always a pleasure to come to you. It's the Monday edition of The Cross in the Desert. We have a special two-hour program today. In a few minutes, I'll be joined by Sarah Brannick. She'll be giving me updates on the latest developments with the person that she's following and campaigning for. That is Amir Hikmati, imprisoned in Iran. And we're going to get the latest details about what's going on for the plight for Amir's freedom. A little later on, I have a very special good friend. Her name is Nazrin Mohammadi, author of the book Ideas and Lashes, the story of her brother's death, imprisonment, and torture. That is Akbar Mohammadi, about 8 years ago in Evin prison. She's going to talk to us today about the house arrest situation with her parents that still live in Iran. You really want to hear about this very, very sad situation. She will join us later. This morning, what I want to do, I want to turn our attention just for a few minutes away from Iran to the situation in Iraq. Of course, all of us are aware of ISIS. That's what they're called. This is a militant Sunni Islamic group making their way across Iraq, bringing death and destruction. And what this means is that it's a difficult situation for the Christians in Iraq. Just, I think, yesterday, the ISIS group killed two Iranian border guards. So this situation in Iraq is really heating up. And what I want to do just for a couple of minutes is I want to bring two special reports about the plight of Iraqi Christians right now on the cross in the desert.
Remember this place called Babylon? Once home to millions of Christians, Iraq's oldest religion has been nearly wiped out of the country. But how did this happen? Christianity was brought into Iraq in the first century by the Apostle Thomas and his pupils. Iraq is actually one of the oldest continuous Christian communities in the world and has subsequently been persecuted for almost just as long. The Vatican has voiced concern about the flight of Christians out of Iraq and the Middle East, driven out by endless wars and poverty and discrimination. During those wars, for centuries, Iraq's Christians have fled to the northern mountains of Al-Qosh, where they found protection from an unlikely ally, Kurdish fighters known as the Peshmerga. And now, with the recent fall of Tal Afar at the hands of ISIS, some of the country's Christians have once again fled to Al-Qosh. Before 2003, there were approximately 1 million Christians, primarily in the northern regions of Iraq. Today, there are less than half that number, approximately 450,000. Some reports even say that number is closer to 300,000, as tens of thousands of Christians are fleeing their homes into nearby Syria and Jordan. The Christian nonprofit organization, Open Doors, ranks Iraq as the fourth most dangerous place in the world to be a Christian. Now, it's hard to believe, but many Christians felt safer under the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein, who ruled with a rather secular government relative to others, including ISIS. In fact, Saddam Hussein's foreign minister, Tariq Aziz, his real name was actually Michael Yohanna. Following Hussein's execution, Christians in the region reported extreme violence against them. Back in 2010, during the infancy of ISIS in Mosul, Christians reported that ISIS thugs were stopping random people on the street, asking them for identification. The purpose? If someone had a Christian name, such as Michael, they'd be shot dead right there on the street by ISIS militants. With Iraq's Christian numbers dwindling so rapidly, it's even garnering attention from Pope Francis, who's calling for peace and posed this question to the world. Who is selling them weapons? From Washington, D.C., Manila Chan, RT.
We left the friendly confines of Erbil heading towards the historic area of Nineveh, now known as Mosul, home to some of Iraq's besieged Christians. Our guide past the Majid brought us as far as the Kurdish army, called a Peshmerga, would let us go.
This is about the end of the line if you don't want to run into ISIS. We've been told they control the mountains behind us right now, and a few kilometers down the road you'd run into an ISIS checkpoint. This is the town called Bartila. It has about 25,000 Christians in it, but we couldn't find one that would talk to us on camera because they're afraid of retribution. The conditions here are abysmal. There's no water because ISIS has turned it off, and no electricity because the Maliki government has turned that off. They are protected by the Peshmerga, who have set up a perimeter around this town and a few other towns around here. Without that, they know that ISIS would come in and kill most of the people here. They're asking for prayer for Christians around the world, and one Christian leader told me, just like the Apostle Paul asked for prayer, they're asking for prayer that God will protect this town and this region.
Bartila lies just a few miles from Nineveh, or Mosul, the first major victory for ISIS just days ago. We found the town nearly deserted. While Christians in the town wouldn't be seen on camera, we talked to one of the house church leaders. On our way back to the Kurdish capital, Erbil, Pastor Majid relays what he said. He told us when ISIS captured Nineveh, they gave Christians three choices.
They are not allowed to open their churches. And even if they opened, they are going to burn the churches. And also, the Christians been asked to pay the tax. If not, they can leave Nineveh. And if they didn't left and they didn't pay the tax, they should give their heads.
When you say give their heads, you're talking about being beheaded?
Yeah.
In the midst of this cauldron surrounding them, this church leader sent out a prayer SOS.
Raise up prayers for us. This is what we need. When man is praying, God is working. So it is important for the churches outside Iraq to raise up prayers and also to fast for the sake of the people of Iraq.
Chris Mitchell, CBN News, on the road from Bartila to Erbil.
This is a serious situation for the Iraqi Christians who have been trying to take a stand in the region for the gospel and are forced to leave their homes now, a very serious situation that we all need to pray for them about. And they have faced so much persecution before, but now it's becoming even more dangerous to name the name of Christ in the region of Iraq. But when you see visuals of these Christians, when you see video of what they live like in this region, your heart just breaks. These are faithful followers of Christ that are putting their lives on the line. And what an example you and me can learn from them. They have virtually, in some situations, nothing. Electricity and foods, the very things that you and I take for granted every day, and these poor Christians don't have. And what true faithful followers of Christ these Iraqi Christians are. And just as that man asked, and this, by the way, was a CBN special report, he asked for our faithful prayer. That's the best we can do. It's the very least we can do. But when we pray for these Christians, remember, that could be you and me. One day, that could be our situation, not knowing what will happen in the world next and the events that happens. That could be you and me one day. And so my heart just breaks for these Iraqi Christians, and I would just ask that you would spend some time just crying out to Jesus. for their safety, for their endurance, for their life as they face the onslaught every day of ISIS. This past weekend, my good friend Magma Abedini, who is faithfully praying and being patient, awaiting the return of her husband to be freed from Iranian prison, had a very, very, just a heartbreaking situation happen to her. And I want to read this status of what Magma shared on Facebook just a couple of days ago. And she writes, 2 years ago today, Saeed packed his suitcase for a quick trip to Iran. It is ironic that today was the day that I received his suitcase without him. It was painful as I had to unpack his belongings. As tears streamed down my face, smelling and touching each shirt, I prayed that this would be the sign of him coming home soon. Thank you for your continued prayers. I guess I can't imagine, in a million years, I can't imagine what that had to feel like. Think about this. It was 2 years ago to the very day that Saeed packed his clothes and left for Iran. And just this past Saturday, the beginning of summer, Magma receives in express mail his suitcase that he packed the day he left 2 years earlier. And can you visualize that for a minute? I don't know how emotionally I could deal with that, but Magma, being the strong, courageous woman of God, dealt with it in her own unique way. And what I want to share with you right now, before our guest Sarah comes on, I want to share with you a good Facebook friend, Cindy Martin Morgan. Her father had such an impact. He was the original Bible Answer Man. I learned so much on Talking to the Cults through his publication. She had something to say about what Magma wrote, and I want you to hear this. Dear Sister in Jesus, Magma posted that 2 years ago today, on June 21st, Saeed packed his suitcase for a quick trip to Iran. Amazingly enough, Magma received Saeed's suitcase today and had to unpack his belongings. It is beyond belief that America, Saeed's own homeland, has failed to make him a priority. Instead, we have witnessed our nation's leaders negotiating with Iran and not thinking it important enough to insist on the release of one of our own. The fact that Saeed was in Iran starting an orphanage when arrested adds insult to injury and highlights the evil he is up against. While in good faith embarking on a humanitarian effort, what Iran suggested Saeed to do, our brother in Christ, was thrown into prison and continues to be persecuted for his faith. In utter disbelief, we witness how swiftly a deserter and high-ranking terrorist have been rewarded by our own leaders with freedom. This feels like we're watching a horror movie in slow motion, and we wish we could change the channel and make it go away. It's not easy to wrap our heads around the fact that our government no longer seems to be on our side. History, as always, is repeating itself because so many that have failed to learn from it. God have mercy on America. Most importantly, may he cause one of the greatest awakenings here of our need for the kind of freedom from sin found only in Jesus Christ. And that's from Cindy Martin Morgan. I couldn't have said it better myself. Where is our priorities? Amir Hikmati, Saeed Abedini, where is the priority for making the situation that Iran, we demand they release our two American citizens. They still sit in a prison cell undergoing extreme psychological and physical torture while we set free five of the top terrorists of the world. Where is our thinking and where is our priority? It's very, very sad. As I read this, I'm visualizing what Magma had to go through, unpacking her husband's suitcase that she received 2 years to the day. Well, we are praying for you, Magma. We are standing with you. We are speaking out for you. We refuse to stop speaking out and praying until Saeed and Amir are home. This is our priority here on the cross in the desert, to make certain that these men are released soon. It has been long, way too long. Amir has been there over 1,100 days. It is wrong. It should never be this way. Saeed has been there now 2 years. This is wrong. This is unacceptable. And yet we stand by waiting and wondering why our government, and think of the contrast, our government says to the world, five of the top terrorists can go free. We are engaging in nuclear talks with Iran. By July 20th, it will be a very important day. I got my guest now, Sarah Brannick, on the cross in the desert. And good morning to you, Sarah. Welcome to the cross in the desert. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fine. I was just reading, I don't know if you heard, just a minute ago, about Negma receiving Saeed's suitcase in the mail just this past weekend, unpacking her husband's belongings. This suitcase was the suitcase he packed, Sarah, 2 years ago to leave for Iran, and now Negma received it in the mail. Can you imagine, Sarah, what that had to be like for her to unpack her husband's suitcase and look at all the clothes?
Yeah, and everything that's happened in the past 2 years. Yeah, I don't know.
Now, it's hard to visualize that. It's hard. She described it as so painful. She's pulling out the clothes that Saeed would have worn, and she got his suitcase in the mail just 2 years ago. When he left, she just first got it in the mail this past weekend. It's so painful and sad. Now, what I want our audience to understand is that you have taken up the cause of Amir Hekmati, and you've been working very, very hard to inform and educate all of your Internet followers, Twitter, Facebook, about the plight of Amir. So what I want you to do this morning on the cross in the desert is talk to us about Amir and share with us the latest happenings in his campaign.
Well, the biggest problem is that so many Americans still don't know about him. And I think in his case, everything pretty much that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And Iran told his family at first not to go to the American government, not to, you know, broadcast this. And this was before he even did that televised confession. So they told them that there was just a misunderstanding. And so for Americans, most of them still don't even know about him. And I've all the people that I've been telling, and me and other friends now too, I've met a lot of people that have become real passionate about this. And we get on Twitter, and we try to do it almost every day, but we get on Twitter, and then we just post and post, and we retweet each other's posts, and we contact, you know, we try to do, like, aim at, like, news anchors and other people that are have a large audience. And then they sometimes do end up retweeting some of our posts for Amir and information. And what we see is, like, a lot of Americans saying, I've never heard of this guy, and I'm so angry about this. Why is the media hiding this from us? And why don't talk about Amir all day long?
You know,
about
all of the
other Americans.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. I was just reacting to the fact that a lot of Americans haven't heard about Amir. I think we take that for granted because of the great media outreach on the Internet, on Facebook, Twitter. We kind of assume that their story has been told and has reached a lot of people, but that's not the case, as you're finding out. There's still a lot of people unaware.
Yeah, and then when they do find out, they're upset, and it makes you feel almost guilty that this guy's been in prison for years and we don't even know about it. And it makes you feel, like one guy, he said, you know, he feels hurt. He said, you know, they've hidden this from us. And here the Iranians blasted it all over their television, but that was on Iranian networks. But Americans aren't told about this American and what he's going through and, you know, having to, you know, give this coerced confession on TV, and now he's still in prison. It's like when that confession came out, America should have been aware of that and should have been told all about it. And should have done something about it, should have gotten him back as soon as possible. Instead, it's almost like he's been abandoned.
Yes, I can understand your feelings and the reason why so many people that find out of the mirror are very angry. They want to know, where has this story been? Well, I want to say something to you, Sarah. I was reading from Cindy Martin Morgan this morning, her reaction to what happened when Negma opened Saeed's suitcase. And she used this word. She says, Saeed's own homeland, our government has failed to make him a priority. And that would be the same in the case of Amir. Our administration, our government has failed to make his case a priority. And here we are speaking with Iran about nuclear issues instead of human rights. Your feelings about that?
I just get disgusted. I can't stand it. I think that if we have anything to do with Iran, the very first thing is to have Saeed and Amir thing, is send the Americans back or anybody else they have, you know, if they deny that they have that Robert Levinson, but if they have him, you know, we need to find out and get him back too. But if we have anything to do with them, I don't even see why we have anything to do with them or why their leaders are allowed to come to America, come and go, while they keep Americans in their prison unlawfully, you know.
Yes, now,
it's like Saeed and Amir
Facebook
didn't break Iranian law.
Right, and that's the thing I think people need to understand. Saeed was on a humanitarian mission to help build orphanages in Iran. And in the case of Amir, he was there to visit his family, and they have been both held unjustly without any cause. Then there's a third person I want you to mention. There is a Marine in Mexico. Can you fill us in on his situation?
He's being held on weapons charges. He missed his exit, went over the border, and got apprehended by these Mexican authorities, and they said he had, you know, three guns in his truck and that he was, you know, gun running or something. But they don't even say that. Now they just say, well, those guns are illegal in our country. So now they're not even saying he's a gun runner, you know. But I think he's got a lot more support, and that because his situation just happened, and a lot of people are really angry. I mean, it's actually gone all the way to the top. They actually did a petition to the White House, and they got over 100,000 signatures, so that's what they needed. And the White House has to do something about that. If you get a petition to the White House and you get it over the amount of signatures that you need. And this situation has gone to the top, and they have a lot more support, you know, whereas, you know, Amir's situation was kind of kept in the dark, and, you know, people weren't informed about that right away. But in a way, I think this Andrew Tamarisi's case is helping Amir's case come out, because all these people that are fighting for Andrew are also interested when they hear about Amir. And so, like, every tweet storm that we do for Andrew, the people that know about Amir are including him too, and they're saying, you know, this guy was a Marine also. You know, these guys are basically Marine brothers, and, you know, if they could, they would help each other. They would fight for each other. So, you know, and we've got to, you know, kind of be their voices for them, you know. And a lot of Americans feel this, you know, responsibility if you're going to thank them for their service. And, you know, our freedom that we live every day, that's not free. It costs guys like these, you know. And so you can't take that for granted. And all the people that, you know, live in America, they owe that to them.
Yes, and you made an important point there that I think we need to reiterate again and again and again. Freedom is not free. Our brave military soldiers put their lives on the line every single day. And this freedom is bought and paid for by their sacrifice in many, many cases, and freedom is not free. I want to jump back to what you said also about the tweet storm. This past weekend, there was a tweet storm for Amir and for Saeed and for Talamisi in Mexico. And can you tell us a little bit about the response and the outpouring to that tweet storm?
I think, with each tweet storm I've noticed is that our postings get more and more retweets, which is, you know, that means it's reaching more and more people and it's getting passed around. And instead of it decreasing or dying down, it almost seems like the support is building. So that's encouraging, because if we could call enough attention to them, it's like, even if, you know, right now Amir's still in prison, but if he was getting the recognition, you know, sometimes even like the guards in those prisons, they may think he's just this ordinary prisoner. Nobody knows about him. He was just this ordinary American, and no one knows about him. But if they did see something like, oh, this guy is well-known, he's recognized, or, you know, Americans all know he's a household name or something, they would, some of them, they're still, you know, they have almost like a respect to that. And then some prisoners have mentioned that when they weren't, before they were in prison, they weren't known at all. They were just, you know, an average person. But when they went to prison and their case became this, you know, huge, you know, became well-known and they became a household name, they said that some guards actually got respect for them and thought, oh, that's a famous person, you know, and then they didn't treat them as bad. I don't know if that would bring those kind of results. That's what we would hope, is that maybe he would be treated with more respect. We hear that he's treated kind of like the worst because he's an American.
Well,
but they may not respect him at all because they may think he wasn't, you know, valuable enough for America to, you know, exchange him.
Well,
but
what
they
you're bringing
that
up
Americans,
is very...
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt
you. Americans do care. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's all right. Listen, I just wanted to jump off on a point you made about the respect that Amir would be getting because of the recognition of his case and the tweet storms and becoming well-known. I have been following, of course, my Facebook friends Mariam and Marzea from Captive in Iran. Their book is the story of being in Evan prison 5 years ago. Now, their book talks about when the international consciousness of Americans and Europeans all begin to recognize their case and begin to put up billboards and send messages on the internet and do the same thing that we're doing for Saeed and Amir, that the Iranian government, it pressured them, and it was very, very fundamental that all of this attention was very instrumental in their release. And so this is very important, that when people listen to our program, they understand that the tweeting and the petitioning is not in vain. It has a very dramatic effect on Iran. And would you agree that this is so important that we keep their case alive and keep the awareness out there, because it does make a difference in the situation in Iran?
Yeah. And like you said, international, like they are getting support from other countries too. That reminds me, we ran into some people that were helping us with our tweet storms and joining us. They're in Canada, and so we were like, thanks for helping us, you know, and they said, well, your Marine is our Marine. They said, we've always been allies. So that, to us, I just thought that really encouraged us and helped us, because for all of us that have been tweeting for Andrew and Amir and, you know, saying, you know, bring back our Marines that are being held abroad, it just, you know, that it was noticed by people in Canada, and they wanted to join, and they were actually helping, and they were, you know, joining. It just really helped us. Our morale, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Canadians are such a support. They're just a wonderful, supportive group of people. They also are very supportive of Iranians. John Baird, a minister of Canada, has spoken out on behalf of Iranians, supporting their plight for freedom, and has been very vocal against the abuse of human rights. So Canadians are truly our allies, our good friends. Now, Sarah, also, what's happening with Amir, they are working hard for a retrial. Do you have any updates on that?
No. I guess he's still waiting. He requested one, so I don't know if they're going to grant his request. I hope they do. And I hope it ends in his favor, too.
A very touching, very heartbreaking situation we've discussed before, but I think our audience needs to know about Amir's father. What can you tell us about the situation with Amir's father?
Oh, well, he's developed brain cancer, and they say it's terminal brain cancer. And so his, you know, when he does write letters or, you know, asks the Iranian leaders to release his son, he just says, this is a father that wants to see his son one more time. You know, I just want to hug him. I want to kiss him. And, you know, wants to have his family in one place again, and he wants to know his son is free. The sad thing is it's almost like, you know, time is running out, and it feels like, you know, if these two governments keep procrastinating this situation, it's going to be too late, and they're never going to, you know, it's never going to be rectified, this injustice. And it's this, you know, it's a tragic injustice that needs to be rectified as soon as possible. And they'll never be able to get back years that they've taken from this family.
It's really heartbreaking to hear that. His only wish is for his son to see him. He wants to be with his son. He knows that his condition is terminal. And I can't imagine just the pain of not only having your son home, but the pain of knowing that your loved one is suffering so much like that and may not be here if and when Amir is released. Well, now, for those that are listening, Sarah, on your Facebook page, how can our listeners best get involved in helping Amir? What can you tell them to do?
Well, you can write letters and try to get other politicians involved. And I've heard that senators and representatives, they like that. They like it when they get personal emails from people that are, you know, trying to get their help, and that makes them feel like, you know, people are looking to them for their assistance and their voice. And they like to get those personal emails, and people have gotten responses when they email them about, or they write letters about Amir, and they say, you know, they get a response back from their representative and says, you know, I really appreciate your concern for Amir Hekmati. I'm going to look into this, and I'm going to, you know, see what I can do. So anyway, that's encouraging, because then it feels like, you know, if you can get them, you know, to enough people to demand his release, Washington is, they've got to respond. They've got to do something. They can't just let this, you know, go on with their talks with Iran and not mention this at all, not mention Saeed or not mention Amir. That's ridiculous. And if all the people, and if there's enough people demanding this, you know they've got to do something about it.
Sarah, did you ever think the day would come when your government would be so laxed in supporting their veterans, supporting their military, and bringing people home that are in prison? Did you ever think you would live to see the day that this would not be a priority?
No, I mean, if you had, you know, U.S. citizenship, you used to be perfectly fine to go travel where you wanted, you know, and they would usually leave you alone. Now it's under this administration, all these countries are taking advantage of our, you know, situation with our government leaders that are failing the U.S. citizens. And I think that when you see people like Tom Arese getting arrested in Mexico, this is Mexico taking advantage of us because of our president. And, you know, this is, you know, Iran taking advantage of us, you know, and all these countries are, they're just taking advantage of the fact that our administration is not helping its citizens. They're not looking out or watching out for the well-being of Americans.
Well, I really appreciate you giving of your time, your sacrificing of your time to make Amir's case known to the internet world, that you're involved in spreading this story. And the thing I think that I keep hearing again and again is many Americans are saying, I didn't know about this. It shows the failure of our government. It shows the failure of our elected leaders doing their job and making this a priority. So I want to thank you, Sarah, so much for your dedication and your passion for Iranian human rights, for freedom, for Amir and Saeed, and the rest of our Americans that are captured abroad. Thank you so much for your hard work, and thank you so much for being on The Cross in the Desert this morning. That's Sarah Brannick, and with a special report, she's being faithful in following Amir and doing everything that she can to make his case known all over the Internet. So I really encourage you to support Sarah in her effort, and she does a great job. It's such a pleasure to know her. We're going to hear some special music right now from Kristen and Gary. I think that's their name. Keith and Kristen Getty. I'm so sorry. This is a great classic Christian song. It's called In Christ Alone. We're going to listen to it right now on The Cross in the Desert. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
My hope is found.
That is music from Keith and Kristen Getty, a classic song. They are like the modern hymn writers of today, a song called In Christ Alone, some beautiful worship music this morning on the cross in the desert. I just picked this up off the AFP, and this is concerning Maryam Ibrahim, the young Sudanese woman who, of course, has been in the news the last couple of months. She was in prison because she was accused of being an apostate, marrying a Christian man. And this is in the Sudan. She also has given birth, you know, recently to her child while in prison. Now, I cannot confirm this story. I'm going to read to you the news I've got, and I'm going to keep following up on this. It says a Sudanese Christian, we're talking about Maryam Ibrahim, who gave birth in prison after being sentenced to hang for apostasy, has been freed, one of her lawyers said on Monday. The case of Maryam Yaha Ibrahim Ishkag sparked an outcry from Western governments and human rights groups after a judge sentenced her to hang on May 15th. Maryam was released just about an hour ago, Monanad Mustafa told the AFP, and that would be incredibly good news if this is absolutely true. This young Sudanese Christian woman, her father was a Muslim, but the government decided that even though she was raised by her Christian mother, they decided that she still was a Muslim, and for her to leave her faith as a Muslim and you become a Christian, according to the Sudan, was apostasy. She was going to be hanged. She gave birth to her daughter in prison. I think her name was Maya. And then they said that she would be able to stay alive for a couple of years nursing the child, and then she was going to be hanged. Well, there has been, of course, international outcry against the terrible violations to this lady's human rights and religious freedom. And it seems like, if this story is accurate and true, what I'm reading, that she has been freed. And we're very thankful for this good news. But I will keep watching the story. If any more developments, I will bring them to you here on the Cross in the Desert. Well, what I want to do now is talk a little bit this morning about just the continuous, horrible situation in Iran with the silent execution of prisoners. You know, since Rouhani took office back in August of 2013, there has been a huge spark and spike in execution of political prisoners. The increase of political prisoners being executed has just risen, tripled, has gone out of control. And this is the way my friend, my human rights activist friend Shadi Pave describes what has happened under Rouhani. It's just the execution rate has gone through the ceiling, for lack of a better term. Well, what I want to do right now, I want to play this short clip from Nazanin Afshin Jam. She has something to say about this on June 20th. I just want to mention that within the next couple weeks, everything should work out, and I will be honored to have Nazanin on my program to talk about human rights in Iran, to talk about her role as a Canadian. She's an Iranian-Canadian, what her role is in defending the rights of Iranians, and how she speaks out so powerfully against the injustices. She, of course, is the president of Stop Child Executions. And she's an amazing, powerful voice for human rights. And everything working together, she should be here on the cross in the desert within the next couple of weeks. But what I want to do right now is play this special clip from Nazanin about the rights for political prisoners in Iran. So let's listen.
Hello, my name is Nazanin Afshin Jam. I'm a human rights activist and president and co-founder of Stop Child Executions Organization. I'm recording this on June 20th, which is the International Day in Support of Political Prisoners in Iran. While execution numbers are through the roof, with close to 700 executed in Iran last year alone and more than 300 already this year, the reality is that there are a lot more that needs to be counted. While they may not face the gallows, many prisoners face a slow death, a so-called silent death inside the prison walls. Prison conditions are terrible. Many develop health problems whilst in prison, with problems with their lungs because of the closed, cramped spaces. The air quality is so bad they develop respiratory diseases, kidney problems, other internal ailments, and some are even at risk of losing their eyesight because of the quality of light. Zainab Jalalian is at risk of losing her eyesight due to beatings from interrogators and the lack of medical care afterwards. Others have existing health conditions which only get worse inside the prison. These prisoners are often denied access to medical treatment even when they're close to death. I've had cases of families who've told me about their children who were on death row inside the prison, and others, for that matter, that have been close to death. They've tried to commit suicide inside the prison walls because of so much pressure, and some are even almost bleeding to death, and the guards will not take them to the hospital or get them medical attention. This is all part of a systematic plan by the regime to rid themselves of these prisoners, especially political prisoners, because they threaten the authority of the regime. We need to draw attention to this urgent, often overlooked situation, and we need to act. Please tell your local representatives and media and be their voice on the outside. And hopefully you can also pressure the United Nations to send a special rapporteur to investigate this urgent issue.
That is Nazanin Afshin-Jam. So well said. She knows very well what she's talking about. Now, she mentioned someone there. I want to talk to you just a minute about Zainab Jalilian, who is going blind. If you go to my Facebook page, you can scroll down, and you'll find this petition to sign to put pressure on Iran about this young girl. She's a 30-year-old Kurdish activist, and she was convicted and sentenced to death by the Islamic Revolutionary Court in Iran for allegedly being a member of the Kurdish political party. Now, think about this. Her trial only lasted a few minutes. Based on her membership of a Kurdish political party, she was accused of fighting against God and was given the death penalty. Now, after a long period of follow-ups with judicial authorities and not being able to receive the answers, the Supreme Court overturned the death sentence and changed it to life in prison. Well, what's going on now with Zainab is she's in Kermanshah Central Prison, known as Dizal Abad Prison in Iran. It's maintained with a severely deteriorated internal bleeding and infection problems. And this is because of beating and torture going on. And this poor young girl, she's not being treated for her blindness. Despite her illness, the authorities are still refusing to give her proper treatment and transfer her to the hospital, which is killing her slowly and painfully. As Nazanin pointed out, this is the kind of tactics they use is called silent execution. Zainab is going blind. She is failing in health. She's 30 years old. She didn't have a fair trial. She is lingering in this prison in Iran, and you can be her voice. You can say something about her situation. You can make her cause known. So please come to my Facebook page and help Zainab Jalilian and sign the petition. You may not think that this has much of an effect, but I want to admonish you, it has lots of effects. When we put our petitions together, it is a voice for the voiceless. It does have an effect, and so I really, really urge you, please go to my Facebook page and make Zainab a priority. Make her case known. Join the thousands who are signing her petition for her freedom. Well, speaking about freedom, which is something central to my program, of course, if you are a World Cup soccer player, are a World Cup fan, and you love to watch soccer. Of course, in Iran, it's known as football. It's not the same. It's called by a different name, but it's the same thing, if you will. This past weekend, Iran was facing Argentina, and they lost 1-0, and they were eliminated. And it was because of a referee's failure to assign a penalty. 70 million Iranians were just heartbroken. A 1-0 loss, but they're very excited about their team. I wonder if you know what's going on behind the scenes in Iran? I'm sure you probably can't guess. When it comes to spectator sports like volleyball or football, women are banned from going into the stadiums. And you might think, well, that's nothing new, the way women are treated like second-class citizens. Well, last week, dozens of Iranian girls and women stood outside the closed gates of Tehran's Azadia Stadium. All they wanted was the chance to cheer on the Iranian volleyball team in its game against Brazil, right? But because they are not men, they were banned from attending. And it's hard for you and I to comprehend how something like that can go on. It's such a sad picture. You see these photographs of these women with faint smiles standing outside the closed gates of the stadium. And it's just, it's hard to see. They are banned from watching spectator sports. Because of the segregation of sexes in Iran, men and women cannot be together. But a lot of these women actually dressed up as Brazilians and got in. And there's a lot of stories going on about how they snuck in anyway. But what I want to do right now is I want to play this special. We're bringing some context to what is going on with the banning of women in Iran. We're going to hear it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Iran has banned female fans and even women journalists from attending World League volleyball matches in Tehran. The official ANA news agency reported women were reportedly turned away from the Azadi Stadium when Iran played Italy in the first leg on Friday, while female reporters inside the complex were ordered to leave. Female journalists are banned from entering the stadium for the next three matches in Tehran, ANA reported. Without giving details, National Police Chief General Ismail Al-Mahdi Moghaddam said it was not yet in the public interest for men and women to attend such events together. We cannot allow the presence of women in stadia. The police are applying the law, he said in comments carried by Fars News Agency. Placed in the difficult Group A, Iran has already hosted Brazil in Tehran, as well as one game against Italy. Two more games are planned in the Azadi Stadium that can hold 12,000 spectators, against Poland on June 27 and 29, according to the Khabar Online news website. Authorities had confronted female journalists holding proper press credentials issued by Iran's National Volleyball Federation on Friday, and ordered them out. Protest. A small group of female fans protested outside, and journalist Fatemeh Jamalpour of the reformist Shah Daily said they were detained by the authorities. Jamalpour was also taken into custody and held for 6 hours, she said on her Facebook page. Since Iran started playing in the World League, only once, in 2013, have Iranian women been allowed to attend the game. Since then, however, female journalists had been allowed to cover the games. ANA did not give any explanation about the new ban on female journalists. Iranian Vice President Shahin Molavadi has protested against the ban on female fans. She was reported by media as saying that Iran's President Hassan Rouhani, who advocates more social freedoms in the Islamic Republic, was looking at ways to resolve the issue. Female spectators are also banned from attending football matches in Iran. Officials say this is to protect them from the lewd behavior of male fans. This year, police have also prevented the public screening of World Cup matches from Brazil, despite Iran playing in the tournament. Football fans are instead forced to watch the games indoors. But the ban did not prevent thousands of women and girls from taking to the streets on Saturday night to celebrate a laudable performance by Team Mali against heavyweights Argentina, which they lost 1-0.
Well, this is the ongoing discrimination of women in Iran. Right now on The Cross in the Desert, I have my special guest, Nazrin Mohammadi, and she's going to speak to us this morning about the situation with her parents going on in Iran. And good morning, Nazrin, and welcome to The Cross in the Desert.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you so much.
Well, I don't know if you caught the report I just had about the banning of women from stadiums in Iran. Now, you used to live in Iran several years ago, and this is the ongoing problem of discrimination against women in Iran.
I heard and I saw a lot, and there are stoning women, they are just even the guys, the men, they don't have freedom. But the most difficult is for women. And, we heard and I was born in Iran. I saw on TV, but I never wanted to see, the women, closely, because I didn't want to see. And my parents, one time happened to me, my school, they want to take me to, see a stoning, but my parents forbid me. And I'm happy about that. But there is no freedom at all for women. And Randy, you are a human rights activist. I think you have a lot of information about women and about Iranian in Iran. And I think you have more information than me. And I'm proud of you. And I don't know, sometimes I'm speechless.
Well, it's just a pleasure to have you, Nazrin. Now, I want to shift gears, if you will, from this situation with the banning of women. I want our audience to know a little bit about you and your background, because we're going to talk about a situation in Iran that's very heartbreaking and has to do with your parents. But you are a human rights activist, and you are working hard to educate us here, Akhmar Bahamidi, and what happened to him as a human rights activist in Iran. Now, I want our audience to know that you are a citizen and that you live in California and that you speak often about the violations of human rights in Iran. Tell us a little bit about yourself this morning.
Sure. Thank you so much that you invited me first to this radio. And then I was born in Iran, and I'm a human rights and political activist. I'm a Republican. I'm a citizen here. I'm a student at the postgraduate in California, in San Diego. And I was, you know, I was in Iran, and I saw a lot of crime and a lot of, you know, people were stoning, killing, or be jailed by Islamic regime of Iran. My brother Akbar was one of them. He was leader of student in 1999. And he was just a student. He wanted freedom. He was a human rights activist. He was political activist. And then regime took him, arrested him, took him to jail, and then torture him more than 7 years, and under torture, kill him.
And this is heartbreaking. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this Akbar or Nida or Tarane and Sohrab, Sattar. There are many people, you know, were killed by Islamic regime of Iran. These innocent people were killed by Islamic regime of Iran. And Nida, Tarane, we know, regime 5 years ago arrested him, put him in jail, raped him, and burned his body. Though we know, regime shot him in the public. And there are many thousands of people who were killed in Iran. We don't know about them. We don't have any name of them. And it's not just about yesterday or today. This happened every day in Iran. And we don't know, even me, in out of country, but I have connection in Iran with the student, and they're giving me a lot of information about prisoner, about people, but still I don't have many information.
I wanted to talk to you this morning about something in relationship to your brother, and this is a point I've said many, many times in my program, Nazrin. Since Rouhani became president in August of last year, there has been a dramatic shift and increase in the execution of political prisoners. Now, Rouhani has claimed that he's a moderate, that he's a conservative, that he's going to do something about the internet freedoms and the political prisoner situation in Iran. Do you think that he has accomplished any good since he's became president? Do you see any decrease in the number of human rights violations?
I think it's increased. Not, you know, it was increased to killing people after he became president. Randy, you know, and most of Iranians, they knew about him. It's a game, like a Khatami came, you know, the Brad Khatami several years ago. And right now, the Brad Rouhani. And this is a game, he is same as like other president. It doesn't matter. He is, you know, killer. And after he became president, they put many people in the jail. And the many people were executed after he became president. And if this is a game, he is killer like other people. Nothing got changed. Like, brought Khatami to show whole world this is a good president. But nothing got changed. He was exactly like others. And, a politics, what you want, I know you, and I know you have a lot of information about Iranian politics and about Iranian people, and you know about Iranian culture too. And we know this is a game, a big game, just to show other countries, European countries or America, United States, that he is very nice guy, nice president. He's going to, give the freedom, more freedom to people. And then we didn't see. We just saw after he became president, more execute, more killing, and he put many more people at the jail. And Randy, thank you so much. Today you gave me time, and you're going to give me time, my mother, my parents.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about your mom. Yeah, just a second there. Sorry to interrupt you there, Nazrin. On my Facebook page, I put a picture up of your mother, and she's standing there, and she's holding a picture of your brother Akbar, just showing us just how much he meant to her, meant to you, as a human rights activist and as someone who stood for freedom. But then there's also a picture of your mother in a hospital bed that she suffered a stroke. I want you to explain to us what is the situation and why it is that Iran refuses to let your mother and your father visit you and to leave the country.
Sure. Dear Andy, I heard the news from Iran that my mother had a stroke and was in coma in the city of Amol in Iran. When I heard this news, like a nightmare happened to me. I'm a citizen here, but I cannot go back in Iran. If I go back in Iran, they are going to kill me. Couldn't deal with this, big problem. I want, I can't describe my situation or my family situation in California. I want to ask you a question. Tell me, please, which civilized government prohibits a parent from seeing their own children? I have a sister-in-law, two brothers, and a nephew living in the United States. My parents were able to get green card in 2010 when they were coming back from Iran to here to visit us in February 2011. Three government agents approached them in Tehran's airport and told them that they were not allowed to leave country and their passport has been confiscated.
Confiscated, yes.
There is no authority that could answer the question that why they are not allowed to leave the country or what is the reason or what they did wrong. Simply, eventually, they just keep denying. They deny my parents and they deny any answer to my parents. Now, if a nation has no place in the country to pursue justice, what can they do? What they, my parents, can they go? This Islamic regime of Iran gets Iranian oil. You know, Iran is rich money. I think this brutal Islamic regime of Iran get Iranian oil money and buys water and technology from the West to suppress their own people. The only other place that we should go and be United States. Unfortunately, this place, you know, this place is also misguided as its name. It is supposed to be United Nations, not United Government.
In the situation that you have,
here, I want to tell you, I am not here to talk about how many of these governments who have representative in United Nations do not represent their nation. I want to hear, you invited me to talk only about Iran. Isn't the time, the world specifically open their eyes and see what is really going on in Iran? How many people are being killed, jailed, tortured with no reason? There is no reason. The innocent people, they're killing everyday innocent people. Where should, tell me please, where should my parents go and ask for justice? There is no justice in Iran. Why is this regime forbidding them for traveling to United States in order to see their own children?
I want to add something to what you're saying, Nazrin.
There is no lie in Iran.
Okay. I don't mean to interrupt you there. I just want to add something to what you're saying so that our audience understands the context. Why your parents aren't allowed to visit is basically because you are a human rights activist and you're connected with your parents, of course, and they have been vocal speaking out against the Islamic regime while living in Iran.
Yes.
And so this is punishment against them because they have spoken against the government, and punishment because that is the parents of your brother that was killed in Evan prison. And so they would consider almost in many ways your parents enemies of God. And so this is punishment, house arrest, if you will, keeping them from traveling.
Yes, yes, you're right. You know, we, first, I'm honored to have a good friend like you as a political and human rights activist, and you're helping many Iranian people. That's, you know, I'm proud of you. Yes, my mom, you know, I'm proud of my mom. And many Iranian people, they are proud of my mom, and they know her as a hero woman and hero mother, because my parents, they spoke against the Islamic regime a lot. And they were not afraid even they were living in Iran. And my regime took them, took my mom, my dad, took them to jail for several times. And I believe they are political activists. And they defend, you know, their own children, and they had many speech with many Persian media out of country, out of Iran. They were in Iran, and they had interview with my parents. But they were not afraid. They knew regime, they are lessening their home, and there are many bugs in my parents' house, but they were not afraid of their safety or their life. And they even had an interview, many European media came in Iran to my parents' house, and they had an interview with my father and my mother. And they are not afraid. And that reason, because I am a political activist, my brother and my sister and even my little nephew, he made a many video clip. His name is Farhan, made a video clip against with Islam regime of Iran. That reason, because of this reason, the Islam regime of Iran didn't allow them to leave country, and today they are as a hostage in Iran, and more than 3 years they are, you know, this regime does not allow my parents to leave country, even go to Dubai or Turkey. Yes, you said they are like a home arrest.
Now, I wanted to help you here just for a second, Nazrin. You requested a few days ago for me to put a posting up on Facebook to my friends, to those that visit my page, to pray for your mom and that she had suffered the stroke. And there has been some really good news, real answers to our prayer, that your mom awakened out of this coma and there is some improvement. What is the latest news on your mom and how she's doing?
I talked to my father last night and this morning. She's conscious, and her doctors told my dad that she's going to be, there is no danger now, but they told my family she's going to be okay, maybe a week, maybe more than a week. They're going to keep her in hospital until all, danger be gone, and after that, they're going to release my mom, and after that, for 6 months or more than six months, my mom should go for physiotherapy because her body doesn't move, and she cannot move her body, and then by help of, after that, maybe I pray for her, and
yes,
I ask, people to pray for her. She's a strong lady, and she's a fighter. She fought against the Islamic regime of Iran, and she's still brave and strong lady. I'm proud of her, and I ask people, please pray for my mother, to get her health and be healthy like before.
Oh,
and
that,
I appreciate, Randy,
good.
Because of you post a lot about my parents, and always you posting about the prisoner and my brother or my late brother from Nida and many prisoners and those people were killed. You're defending them. You're defending for prisoner. You're defending for, innocent people in Yuan. And thank you so much. I appreciate it. I don't
know. Most of the time, pleasure.
I'm really speechless because you are like a, I think you are like an angel for Iranian people.
Well, it's my pleasure, Nazrin. This is what my mission is here on Facebook, is to educate my listeners what goes on in Iran and ask them to be involved in signing petitions, to be a voice for the voiceless. And you mentioned the good news about your mom is recovering. She cannot move. She's going to need rehabilitation, and we continue to pray for her. Now, I want to just talk a little bit about what you're doing here. You're going to university. You're being educated in the and to be more effective as a political human rights activist. It's coming up to July. Next month will be now 8 years ago exactly that your brother died in Evan prison, and you're keeping his name alive. You've published a book about him called Ideas and Lashes. It's his prison diary, the things that he shared with the world in this diary, talking about the way he was treated and tortured. Akbar stood strong to the end, and he's well known in Iran as being a very powerful voice. Share a little bit about how you're keeping your brother's story alive, what you're doing to educate people about what goes on in Iranian prisons.
Thank you so much that you're allowing me to talk about him. And thank you because you're always, I think more than me, you're talking about Akbar and advertising about his book. Because I know and we know Akbar was freedom and political activist. He was just only innocent student. He chanted on the street and he, you know, he said, we want freedom. We want, you know, separate state of church. And then we want secularism like other country. And then freedom for women, freedom for religion, freedom, you know, for everything, like Europe, for United States. And then he was political activist and regime took him in jail and then tortured him. He was so strong. Even regime was torturing him under torture. He was chanting, Viva freedom, down with Islamic regime of Iran. And regime was afraid of him. He was so strong and many prisoners now they are in Washington, D.C. or California, and they used to be his cellmate. They said, we were proud of Akbar always. He was different. He was so strong. He never was afraid. And finally, he's, you know, he lost his life for his nation and for freedom. And when he was alive, and it was his sick leave diary, and his diary, and asked me, Nasrin, to publish this one. First, I was afraid because I knew there are a lot of important and many reality inside of this diary, and it's going to be dangerous for my brother's life, and a regime is going to be angry because they're telling against his talk, he was talking against with Islamic regime. You know, he killed many students. And what happened when they had a rally and demonstration in 1999 and how many people were arrested and what kind of torture regime gave to him and his brother Manuchar and others. Cellmates. And then he asked me to publish it. I denied, but finally I didn't have any choice to publish his book because he swore me to, you know, my parents' life, he swore to his life to publish his book. First, I published it to Farsi, and finally, thanks God, I published his book in English. But I promised him I'm going to publish his book because there a lot of stuff many American people should know and many European people should know about this Islamic regime of Iran. And that was his wish because he told me, Nasrin, there many Iranian people, they know what's going on in Iran and what is this Islamic regime of Iran, and he told me this regime is worse than of Hitler because they are killing many people there. They don't have mercy. And his wish was to advertise his book to the whole world and people read his diary and to know what's going on in Iran. And then I promised him after he was killed, you know, that was my big responsibility to publish his book to English. Yes, finally, I published his book, and you read this book, Randy. Mm-hmm. When I read this book three times, my tears was coming out. And my heart, you know. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to mention one of the most wonderful things about this book is that our former President Bush honored your brother and presented with you a certificate in honor of what he accomplished for freedom in Iran. And that had to be a very, very powerful moment in your life to be honored by former President George Bush.
Sure, of course, yeah. And he sent a letter to my brother, Manuchar, and and my brother's late brother's name, he wrote about my brother Manoushan and Akbar, and he mentioned how brave was my brother Akbar. Even his speech, he mentioned, he invited my brother Manoushan and mentioned about my brother, late brother Akbar, that how much brave he was, and he was killed for because of freedom. And then I am honored that he sent that same letter to me when I sent that book, a copy of that book to him, and he signed, and he gave me that letter. I'm honorable, and then I'm so happy I got that letter, and he and his wife signed for me, but that letter I have it, I did and publish in this book. But other letter he gave, President George Bush gave to my brother Manoushan, I published inside of the book, and his picture Manoushan. Yeah, there is a picture with Manoushan inside of this book too.
Yeah, I wanted to read what he said in this letter from August 13th, 2008 to Manoushan. He said, "Freedom is the universal right of all humanity, and the United States will continue to shine the light of conscience on human rights abuses around the world. Your strength, courage, and sense of purpose demonstrate the power and resilience of the human spirit. We will work for the day when all of the people of Iran are free. May God bless you, and may God bless all those who yearn for liberty. Sincerely, George W. Bush." Just a beautiful, beautiful letter.
Thank you. And he had a speech same day, you know, when my brother Manoushan, you know, was with him. He had a big speech, and he mentioned and about my other brother, late brother, you know, Akbar as a freedom activist, and then he mentioned him how brave was he, and then the CNN and Fox News, you know, they broadcast that speech, and I'm so honored, you know, President George Bush. That time President George Bush helped my family a lot when my brother Akbar was killed when he was president. He helped my other brother, Manoushan, you know, from Iraq to United States. He helped, and in that time he was president, help of government and by help of United States Army, and they brought my brother, Manoushan, from Iraq to United States, and he helped and support my family a lot, and
yes,
I'm
yes,
so
it
honored,
is. One...
you know,
mm-hmm.
to you know,
right.
Because he helped my family, and we respect him a lot, and we love this president.
Yes, yes. Well, what I have just a couple of minutes, Nazarene, and I want you just to tell our listeners some parting thoughts, some things you would have to share with them about your experience, about your thoughts and feelings about the situation in Iran with Saeed Abedini still there in prison and Mir Hikmati still in prison. What are your thoughts that you would like to leave us with in these last couple of minutes about Iran and about the fight for freedom there?
I want to ask the listeners, and you know, they're listening my voice, you know, we need your support, like, you know, just be their voice, their prisoner, like Pastor Saeed Abedini, and many people today, they are in prison in Iran, and women's, men's, and there are many innocent political and human rights, or like a pastor, or many people, because of their religion, like a you know, Baha'i, Jewish, or Christian, or Zoroastrian, they put, you know, they are in the chair, regime put them to chair because of their religion, because there is no free religion in Iran, we know. And then I want you guys be their voice. They need, you know, to support them, when I was in Iran, when I was hearing, you know, the people in the United States, they're supporting Iranian people, just this one gave us a lot of energy and gave us hope, the Iranian people, especially those people at the jail, the prison, they need your guys' support. And this support gives them hope and make them stronger. And I know American people, they are very nice and they love Iranian people. Also, Iranian, almost all of Iranian people love United States and love American people. And they need just, you know, be you American people, be their Iranian voice and be for them, support them, help them, and just send a letter to many human rights, you know, places like Amnesty International, national places, State Department, any places, or share about them, about Facebook, or talk about them, write about them. This can be big help and big support for them. Believe me, when September 9/11 happened, many Iranian young people, they turn candle on and against with terrorists and defend of American people, they turn candle on the night time and they block the, you know, Tehran, the whole street on Tehran, you know, they had a candle night. And my brother, that time Akbar was at the jail. He said, when 9/11 happened, I cried. My tears came out. When even his book, Randy, you read it and you know, when regime was torturing him, he never cried, he never screamed because he didn't want to make regime happy. But he said when 9/11 happened, that sudden happened, his tears came out. He couldn't control himself in that time. And he sent a letter to with American people that I am with you guys. I am so sorry that tourists attacked to you guys and that even that sudden happened. And I published that letter to everywhere. And after I published that letter to everywhere, he was at the jail. And regime took him to another cell and then tortured him for a long time.
Well,
and I want to know
really
what he need on any support from American people, make Iranian people special for those people at the jail, make them so happy and help them a lot.
This is something that's so important for us to understand, that Iranians, the Iranian people love us. They love our freedom. They know they can come here and live out all of their dreams. And you're a great example of coming here, becoming an American citizen, living out your dreams, getting your education, and keeping Akbar's memory alive. I really want to thank you, first of all, for spending the time and informing and educating us. I thank you, Nazreen, for telling us about your mother. We continue to pray not only for her physical rehabilitation, but we specifically pray that by God's grace, they will be able to come and see you here, that God will open this door that has been closed and shut by this regime. And we're praying that the day will come when your mother and father can come here and be with you and be with their family. That is our earnest prayer. I want to thank you for sharing with us this morning, Nazreen, on the cross in the desert. I appreciate your time. And thank you so much for talking about your brother Akbar. From the book Ideas and Lashes, my guest has been Nazreen Mohammadi, live from California. We're going to take a short break right now on the cross in the desert and listen to some incredible Christian worship music from Kristen Stanfill. And we'll be back. This is a song called One Thing Remains. It's a beautiful song, so please give it a listen right now on the cross in the desert. Thank you.
this one thing remains. Your love never fails and never gives up and never runs out on me. Your love never fails and never gives up and never runs out on me. Your love never fails and never gives up and never runs out on me. Your love. And
Christian Stanfill, One Thing Remains, Your Love Never Fails, It Never Gives Up. This is a message that when I speak to this to my Iranian friends, it's like they don't know how to comprehend that, that God's love is that powerful and it never fails. If you have to put yourself in their culture with the God they are taught with day and night. And this is why many Iranians are so burnt out on religion. Some of them become atheists. Some of them completely abandon any religious faith because they see the fruit of Islam in Iran. They see the way people are tortured and treated. They see the way people are disrespected, that there's no freedom. Why do you think they're on the internet day and night searching for spiritual reality? Why do you think many Iranian women, when they read about Jesus in the Bible, they are so attracted to the way he treated and respected women. This is why many Muslim women come to faith in Christ. They see the example of who Jesus is, how he treated women. And many times here on the Cross in the Desert, I've shared story after story from the Bible. The woman caught in adultery that was going to be stoned, how Jesus stepped in with his compassion and love while respecting completely the law of God. He stepped in and saved this woman. Iranians see things like this. They hear things like this. When they read the Bible in Farsi, they are drawn to Jesus because, like Kristen Stanfill says, his love never fails. It never gives up. It is a compassionate love. It is an enduring love. It is a holy love. Why Iranians are coming to Christ, it's very simple. His love. The God that they hear about in Islam is judgmental. The God that they hear about in Islam in Iran is vindictive. He punishes. I wrote a blog about 3 months ago about my Iranian friend that lives in Mashhad. She shared with me the story one day when she was in school as a younger person. She shared with me that the teacher came into the class and explained to the girls there that unless you wear your hijab, unless you are covered by your veil, if you don't obey in this very critical area, that in the judgment, Allah will dangle you by your hair over the flames of hell. This is what Iranians were taught. They are scared into submission. They are frightened with these pictures of God. These are distorted pictures of God. These are not true pictures of who God is. But this is the way Iranians view God, and many of them have closed their heart and mind to anything religion. Many of them become atheists. Many of them completely shut down any response to spiritual reality. And you can understand why. You can understand why they have a distorted picture of who God is. And the goal I have on my program is not just only to talk about human rights, as central and as important as that is. My goal also is to give an accurate picture of who God is. To give an accurate picture of who God is, his nature, his person. Everything about God that attracted me was because he cares for us intimately, that he loves us unconditionally. That was the drawing card for me. And when I hear many, many times about a God that is judgmental in that sense, I'm appalled at the picture and the distortion of the picture of who God is by even many Christians. It's certainly true that God is holy, and it's certainly true that God will judge the wicked. It is certainly true that he is holy, that he hates sin. But sometimes Christians fall into that category too, and that many Muslims have taught about God, and they forget that he is a God of absolute unconditional love. I remember the verse that I first learned as a Christian, 1 John 4, God is love. And it was such an attraction to me to know that God intimately loves me. Here's what I want to tell you this morning. God chose to love us. It was a choice he made. We are his creation. He hates sin. And when Jesus died on the cross, he took all of our guilt and all of our shame as punishment. He was punished for our sins, even though he was absolutely holy and absolutely innocent. But the way that God perfectly keeps his law, brings salvation, is to take all of our guilt and shame upon himself, even though he's completely innocent, and bear the penalty for what we deserve to bear. He took our judgment. He bore our sin. He who knew no sin became sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. The Bible speaks so profoundly that it's in him. All of our sins were transferred to him. All of our guilt and shame was transferred to him. Everything that stood between God and us, Jesus willingly took in his own body, and he bore that judgment and rose again the third day. What victory, what love. And it's such a wonderful song by Christian Stanfield. One thing remains, your love never fails. This is the message of hope that my Iranian friends are hungry and thirsty for. And yet they know if they accept this message, their life is on the line. Because you well know what happens to any Muslim that changes their religion. In Iran, it's death. And yet, many, many Iranians are willing to accept that target on their back because they have found an unconditional love and forgiveness in Jesus. And it is a treasure they embrace with all of their life. What an example they are to you and me. You see, we go to work every day, most of us. We get up, go through the normal routine. We say, hey, yeah, I'm a Christian. We go to church, we worship. But are we ever put in a situation like them for their faith? What would our response to the gospel be if we were in their place? Think about it. It's eye-opening. I love my Iranian friends and their courage and their willingness to embrace Jesus at the cost of their own life. What I want to do now in our remaining minutes is I want to take you to a special testimony. This is Michelle, an Iranian woman, and she has a very powerful, short testimony, but very life-changing. And I want you to hear about her and her journey to Christ right now on the cross in the desert.
It was 1979, the year that a million protesters flooded the streets when the Ayatollah Khomeini overthrew the Shah of Iran. He established Islamic law for all citizens. Samira was just a young girl when this happened.
In the beginning, I had a very fun childhood. When I was born, it was during the Shah's time, and soon after was the Islamic Revolution.
Samira's family didn't practice Islam, though, so she rebelled against the strict laws.
We started having clothes restrictions. We couldn't wear certain clothes anymore. Then we had to wear overcoats and jeans and scarves. Then there was color restrictions. We only had to wear dark colors like black, gray, dark navy, brown. And you can imagine it gets very hot in the summer in Iran, and so it was very difficult.
She especially hated the laws that didn't treat boys and girls as equals.
You would go to a swimming pool, the boys could go swimming, but the girls couldn't, because if the government police came by and saw girls in the swimming pool, parents and families would be arrested and taken to jail. Little by little, I felt as a little girl, they took the life out of me, where what used to be fun, going to school used to be fun, playing with my friends used to be fun, all of that changed.
One day, Samira experienced the injustice of being treated as a second-class citizen. Her hair had come out of her head covering, and a female police officer stepped in.
She grabbed me. She starts shaking me. What are you doing? You have hair showing. And she started, going on and on about how what I'm doing is a sin, and what I'm doing is completely inappropriate, and I kind of kicked her as a little kid and ran away so I don't get arrested. As a little kid, I was afraid of being arrested or being thrown in jail because I had some hair showing. But it was very traumatizing for me as a little girl.
She began to associate the strict Islamic laws with God himself.
I remember thinking, if this is God, I want no part of him. Because if God exists, he is just and he's going to be fair. He's not going to make a big difference between a man and a woman.
Her views were challenged, though, when her family moved to the United States. Her younger sister became a Christian, and it wasn't her new religion that Samira noticed. It was the change in her heart.
She became a different person, and when I looked into her eyes, I remember thinking, wow, what a dramatic difference. I thought I was seeing angels. And it was through that I saw power of Christ, and I thought, maybe God exists.
She decided to find out what made such a difference in her sister's life and talked to her pastor.
He came to talk to me and we sat down and he shared the Bible with me and the story of Christ and salvation.
She still had questions in her mind, but what she heard one day on a Christian radio program made it all clear.
The radio station was talking about a lady who had tried to do good, who tried to help people, but at the end of the day, she didn't know where she was going because she didn't have God in her life. I thought, when it's time for me to go, I don't know where I'm going.
Samira prayed with the man on the radio.
I went through the prayer with him, the salvation prayer, not realizing what I had done, and I accepted Christ into my heart.
She's amazed at the freedom women have in Christ.
And so when you see Jesus, and how he talks about women in the Bible and how he values women, I just think that just all helped me realize that how God is just and love, no matter what time in history we're talking about.
Today, Samira actively works in the legal system, helping women in the United States escape from the harsh rules of the Islamic lifestyle.
I thank God for the fact that I'm here in the United States. I thank God for the freedom that I have.
Samira knows firsthand that true freedom comes only through Jesus Christ.
We've seen a lot of societies how women are put down, women are treated badly, all because of who they are and what they come from. But when it comes to Jesus, all of that goes away, and we have all the same rights. We all have the same amount of love that we get from God, which is a lot. And we're all one. There's no difference. And I think that's the beauty of Jesus.
It is the beauty of Jesus. That is Samira on her journey to faith in Christ as an Iranian woman. She said so many good things in that testimony, and especially the one about how she, when she looked in the Bible, how Jesus treated women. This made such an impact on her because she compared it with the way women were treated in Iran under the Islamic regime. And she could see very clearly the difference. And that's what drew young Samira to Christ, the way women are treated. We've talked about this a little bit this morning on the Cross in the Desert, being banned from sporting events. Women aren't allowed to go into the same stadium and sit and watch a sporting event with men. We've talked a little bit with Nazarin about how women are treated as well, how she was treated when she grew up as a young child in Iran. I want to take the last few minutes on the program, as I always traditionally do. I want to read my latest blog, and this is the story of the plight of women in Iran, their plight for freedom and acceptance. Just recently, a movement has begun in Iran called the Stealthy Freedom Movement, and I want to spend just a few minutes talking to you about this on my latest blog. March 7th, 1979, the new leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini, decrees that it is mandatory for the woman to wear the veil, that is, the hijab. One day later, on International Women's Day, thousands of Iranian women, Tehran, launching a massive protest against the wearing of the hijab. Now, exactly 35 years later, a new silent protest has begun called My Stealthy Freedom. That is a little more obscure, and yet it's having a profound effect on young Iranian women who are rebelling once again against the mandatory hijab law. Iranian journalist Masih Alanijad, who lives in the UK, was overwhelmed at the response she received when she asked Iranian women about their desires to be without the veil. The Stealthy Freedom Facebook page was bombarded with over 500,000 hits in 5 weeks, including pictures and stories of women without their veils. The word stealthy is used to describe the new revolution because of the danger and risk to women who participate in it. If they are caught, they can be lashed, fined, and imprisoned for disobeying the mandatory law. Therefore, in order to avoid the harsh consequences, they must secretly remove their veils, right? For some, removing the veil is a frightening and difficult choice. One Iranian woman who posted her picture of being hijabless and standing in front of the Azadi Towers in Tehran described her journey to removing the veil as a really scary event. Quote, she says, "Whenever I saw revolving lights or people dressed in uniforms, I would think, wow, it's the police," and she began to shake with fear. Eventually, she gained more courage and decided not to let what people think or say bother her anymore. She began to ride bicycles without the veil and ignored the judgmental stares given by women who were dressed in chadors. The history of the hijab is really important to the context of understanding why Iran imposes this mandatory law. On January 8, 1936, the Shah banned the wearing of the veil and threatened arrest to women who defied the law. The law was enacted as an attempt at that time to modernize and westernize Iran. So the banning of the veil, women are not allowed to wear the veil, 1936. March 7th, 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini reversed that law, of course, making it mandatory that women wear the hijab publicly. Iran had been transformed from a secular to a fundamentalist Islamic state in order to conform more closely to the teachings of the Quran. Fear and guilt tactics have been employed by mullahs and clerics in order to manipulate the thinking of women in relationship to the wearing of the veil. One such Muslim cleric, Taj Ezzedine Hillary, publicly declared, listen to this, if the meat was covered, the cats wouldn't roam around it. Hillary characterized women without the veil as, quote, being like uncovered meat. That's his exact words, implying that they would be responsible for gang rapes by Muslim men if they dared to go without their veil. Can you imagine the fear and guilt tactics employed by this cleric? Well, in response to this sick implication, I love what my Iranian friend in the Stealthy Freedom Movement says. You know what she says? Look, I cannot accept that my hair would make men sin and lose their faith unless they have a sick heart, in which case they need to seek a remedy in their own souls instead of making us keep covered. I love it. What a wonderful, courageous thing, she says. Now, another example of the ridiculous superstition surrounding the wearing of the veil is the statement of what a clergyman said on Iranian TV, that a woman's bad hijab is the cause of rainstorms and floods. That's true. That's the way they think. Now, a brave and courageous woman, part of the Stealthy Movement, she just was outraged at this statement, and she posted a picture of her standing in the front of a dried-up riverbed without her veil, looking up to the sky and begging for it to begin raining. So she's calling them. She's calling their bluff. Oh, okay, here's this dried-up riverbed. I'm going to take my veil off. If this is true, it's going to have to start raining right now. And by the way, we need this riverbed to start, you know, having water in it once again. But she's dealing with the superstitious, ridiculous things that are taught in the name of the veil. Well, despite the consequences and the fear and the guilt tactics employed by the Iranian regime, women are standing up again fearlessly in their pictures and stories in order to say to the world, to say to you and me, hey, I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. One such Iranian woman named Masih Alanajad, in a personal letter on her Stealthy page, declared, here's what she said. She said, thank you for creating a page that has given us a chance to be seen by the people of Iran and the people of the rest of the world. I, like most of this generation, wish not only for the day when I will have freedom of clothing, but also the day when Iran will once again be a free country. These chains we bear are never something that we have chosen for ourselves. Well, let me just add in closing about this issue. 2 years ago, I wrote a very important book called The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom, in which I described a woman freedom fighter in Tehran named Behera, who finally broke her silence and stood up against the oppressive government. There's this very poignant scene in Chapter 2 of my book where Behera is waiting for the bus to take her home from university. And while she sits waiting patiently, she composes a declaration that I think perfectly describes the inner cries and convictions of women in the Stealthy Freedom Movement. Quote, I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. I am more than what I wear. I am someone, someone who has the right to speak her mind, the right to be heard, the right to pursue her dreams, the right to be respected, and the right to be treated as an equal. God has given me all of these rights, and no man or government can take these rights away from me. I am a woman, and I proclaim my right to be free. Iran, open all of the stadiums to women. Stop treating them as second-class citizens. Women are created in the image of God. Men and women together are image bearers of the God of the universe, and there is no discrimination. All are equal. I go back to what the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, said, that God has given us the right for life, for for liberty and the pursuit of happiness. While it's true that freedom is an education that we must teach to the world, it is also a gift from our God. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I salute the Iranians who made the happy video, the rooftops of Tehran, and celebrate happiness. I support them. I support the women in the Stealthy Freedom Movement who, although they have to do it a little bit obscure and secretly, they are still saying, I am more than just a veil. And I do support them as well. This is the passion of my heart because, as Nazrin said, we need to be a voice for the voiceless. She used that phrase. But let's think about this for a minute. Today, as we sit in the comfortability of our homes, on the computer, on the internet, at our jobs, wherever we might be, enjoying life, let's remember that freedom is not free. Freedom costs. Think about our Marines in prison, in Mexico and in Iran. Think about Saeed, persecuted for his Christian faith. What he can teach us as Christians in the church about standing for Christ, standing for freedom, and not compromising. We can learn so much from these incredible men. Freedom is not something free. It cost us. To give freedom to you and me, Christ gave his life. In order for freedom to once again engulf Iran, it's going to cost. It's going to be very costly. And there are dedicated Christians in Iran meeting in house churches. But at the same time that they secretly meet, they are willing to go out in the streets and proclaim Christ at the risk of their own life. Freedom is not free. It costs something. And so I just continue to ask that you will pray for my friends in Iran. You will pray for Amir. Pray for Saeed. You will pray for Nazrin and her family that is suffering so much in Iran that can't be reunited with them. Please go to my Facebook page. You'll see the petitions there. Be a voice for the voiceless. This is the number one joy of my life, and I say this in all earnesty. Your voice makes a difference. Your petitions make a difference. Your prayers make a difference in the lives of Iranian people. Despite all the horror and the evil we hear, the light of Christ is getting brighter in Iran. The light of Christ is starting to shine brighter in Iran, and there is nothing that can stop this glorious light. I want to thank you for spending time today with me on this rather lengthy program. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to just come and spend a few minutes and hear the stories of my friends in Iran, to hear the issues and the things that are going on. It is such a pleasure to come with you. I will see you very soon again on Thursday for the next edition of The Cross in the Desert. God bless you. Have an incredible week. We'll see you very soon.
Healing rain is coming down, it's coming nearer to this old town, rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long. Healing rain is coming down, it's coming closer.